This is the Bible Show. Welcome, folks, to another episode of the Bible Show. My name is Sam, and joining me is Will. And we are continuing our series in the miracles of Jesus, and today we're coming to one of the more famous ones. This is the resurrection of Lazarus. So we've talked before about how Jesus does three resurrection miracles in his lifetime apart from his own, and Lazarus is going to be one of them. So what
are those three?
All right, well, you have the son of the widow at Nain when he goes down there.
Okay, yeah,
I remember that one. Jairus' daughter.
Oh, there's three.
And now Lazarus.
Sorry, it just sounded different when you said three.
That's right. So which is showing you that he's far greater than the prophets of the Old Testament. So you had, you know, Elisha raising somebody. He is greater by far than them. And so this is going to illustrate it. So when we jump into this story today, Jesus has just started really ramping up the conflict with the religious leaders in Jerusalem. So if you were looking in John 10, today we're going to be in John 11. But if you were looking in John 10, he's getting into this debate, argument with the religious leaders. And they reach the point that they're like, okay, we're stoning you for blasphemy. You're done. Your life is over. Jesus is like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on a minute. Let me come back at you with some truth. And they're like, no, we're still going to stone you. And so it says they sought to arrest him, but he escaped from their hands. He leaves Jerusalem, goes down to the Jordan, and crosses the Jordan where John the Baptist had his ministry when he was still alive. And so many come to him, and now he's got his little ministry going on over across the Jordan. Everybody in Jerusalem, the religious guys, at this point now want to arrest him and kill him. And so we jump into John 11. With that being kind of the context, the backdrop of what's going on. So, like, this would have been, he had a stressful life.
Yeah, we don't think about that often.
I mean, so people around you are actively seeking to arrest you, to kill you. He's living with that. And the apostles, too. You wonder why they can't stay awake in the Garden of Gethsemane. Imagine having that strain on your emotional bandwidth to not know at any time when it's going to happen, when somebody's going to come at you. Because there's plenty of people who hated Jesus and what he said and what he taught. So they're always living in that reality. So chapter 11, he's on the other side of the Jordan, and it says, now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. So Bethany, if you know where Jerusalem is, Jerusalem's on a mount. When you go to the east, there's the Kidron Valley. And then you come up the other side, and there's the Mount of Olives. On the other side of the Mount of Olives to the east is the village of Bethany. This is where Jesus stayed. So whenever Passover would happen, when one of the big feasts would happen, and everybody from all over is coming to Jerusalem for the feast, Jerusalem's population swelled to, like, insane numbers. And so it's not like you could find a place to stay
in
Jerusalem.
You can't
all fit. Right, you can't all fit. And so people stayed on the hillsides. They stayed in neighboring villages. And Jesus's place that he loved to stay was with Mary and Martha. And so you see stories with them elsewhere. Like, what comes to mind when you think Mary and Martha?
Well, I think this.
Okay, yeah.
this is the big one.
This is the big one. But there's, like, the story where Jesus is staying there and Martha's doing all
moving
the cooking
around, yeah,
and everything else. And Mary's just at his feet, which is kind of her deal. But he's staying at the house. And so now, so they're really close with him. Mary and Martha in particular. And Lazarus, he gets word, is sick. And it says, it was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him, saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, this illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. So if you're Mary and you hear that, how are you feeling?
Positive, but not what you wanted.
Yeah. So, but he's saying, hey, he's not going to die. This doesn't lead to death. It's going to be the glory of God so that the Son of God may be glorified through this. So if you're getting this word back, oh, he's not going to die. It's going to be for the glory of God. What are you expecting to happen?
That he's going to be healed.
He's going to be healed. And everybody's going to go, oh, the power of God. This is wonderful. Let's glorify God. So all of the expectations from this comment are through the roof. Now, we know Lazarus dies, right?
Spoiler.
So this would have been really traumatic, but what is Jesus saying here? Because it's an interesting thing when you start thinking, why would God allow suffering? Like, to what ends? Because he says the illness does not lead to death. He's going to overthrow death. It doesn't end in death. It's for the glory of God so that the Son of God may be glorified through it, which means he's deliberately allowing. He could have healed Lazarus. He could have just said, Lazarus, live from a distance, and Lazarus would have lived. But he's saying, I'm going to allow this to happen for the glory of God. I'm going to allow the suffering. I'm going to allow temporary grief to come upon this home for the glory of God and so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Are you okay with that?
Yes, because I trust Jesus and I've thought about it. But if you're hearing that and you're like, it sounds a little twisted almost.
Yeah.
In a way, you're like.
But that's the way we experience things in this life. It's like, wait a minute, I do all these things for you. Why would you ever allow suffering in my life? And we rail against God and we shake our fist and we want to say, you shouldn't have allowed this. If you're a good God and you're a powerful God, you should have stopped it. And it's like where Jesus says, hey, this is going to bring about the glory of God. It's going to bring about the glory of the Son of God. And by the way, through this, so much more good that you can't possibly imagine is going to come out of this. Yeah, if you're in the moment of grief, if you're in the moment of suffering, and the hand of God has just allowed this, you want to rage. Yeah. You can't make sense of it. And yet by the end of this story, you can jump into the imagination of God a little bit. You know, it's always dangerous to do, to see what his purposes are here. What he brings out of this story is far greater than if it never happened. You know, the good that comes out of it's far greater than if he had said healed, you know, from a distance.
And it's also kind of combats the prosperity angle of God. Oh, like the people who are saying, hey, God would never make me suffer. Or if I have enough faith, I'll never suffer. No, we can see Jesus is deliberately going to let his friend die, let Mary and Martha begin the grieving process. And they're his friends.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't combat them when he's like, oh, the man who you love is dead, is ill.
Yeah.
No, Jesus loves him.
Yeah, that's right. It's not his failure to draw near to Jesus that brought sickness to him. Like, the prosperity gospel, I could really get on a
where you go for a while.
It is so poisonous. It is so bad to teach people or to believe that if you're suffering, it's because either you've failed God or God is displeased with you. Like, the Bible would make no sense at all if that was your operating principle. Like, God says, hey, have you considered Job? He's really good. He has great faith, and suffering comes upon him because he's a worthy candidate to be tested. Like, that's kind of jarring. The apostles, they're all dying. They're all getting crucified and, you know, dragged. Like, it's crazy how all of them are martyred. And it's like, does the prosperity gospel look at them and say, well, they just didn't believe strongly enough?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, none of it makes sense. Jesus' own words are that you take up your cross, be crucified. Don't keep all the treasures and trinkets of this world. Give it away. Like, the gospel's not coming and saying, if you draw near to Jesus, you'll drive Lamborghinis and you'll be, like, that's just so
exact opposite.
Gross.
Yeah, the closer you got to Jesus, it seemed like the more suffering you had. Like, 100%. Lazarus, like, he's letting his friend die, and I think that's a part of it. Like, I think he knows that Mary and Martha trust him enough to do this.
And by the way, just to clarify, the gospel's not against prosperity. The gospel's not against wealth. The gospel is against making that the idol. Mm. And what the prosperity gospel does is it says Jesus is a means to an end. You can get your wealth, you can get your health, you can get all the things you want in life if you step on the stepping stone of Jesus to get you there. And that's gross. Like, Jesus is the prize. That's the way that the Bible presents him. He's not a means to an end. He's the prize. He's the reward. He is the end. And so, yeah, you pull the string.
Yeah, let's jump off that soapbox and get back to
prosperity gospel's wrong. It's poisonous to people's hearts, honestly. I've dealt with a lot of people who feel forsaken by God because suffering came into their life and that was their understanding of him, and that's wrong. All right, so anyway, verse 5. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. He's
making it clear.
This whole family, that he loves them, right? Verse 6. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. And you're like, what? That makes no sense. If you love him and you know he's going to die, like, you should be sprinting. Get on, yeah. get on your camel, your donkey, make, you know, get back to Bethany. But it says he loved them. When he heard he was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Well, what happens in the course of those days?
Lazarus dies.
He dies. And Jesus allows that to happen. In verse 7, it says, then after this, he said to his disciples, let us go to Judea again. Now, what's the problem with that?
Not the right direction. I'm just looking at my map.
What's that?
Isn't Judea not near Bethany? Or well, is it?
No, Bethany is in Judea. Okay. Judea is like the region. So like Jerusalem is in Judea. Bethany's okay. in so Judea. Bethlehem's there. In Judea. It's like the state, right? Okay. So you have Judea. In the middle, you have Samaria. And then up top, you have Galilee. Those are the three big territories that you hear about in the scripture. And so Bethany's one of the cities in the territory of Judea. They're outside of Judea across the Jordan. But the problem is if they go into Judea, who's over there?
Guys are trying to kill him.
All the guys that are trying to kill him, the religious leaders of Judea, are there. And it says the disciples said to him, Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and you're going to go there again? And Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in a day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him, which is kind of a weird way to take that.
If I was the disciples, I would be very confused.
Yeah, why would
I? Sitting with that stuff, and you're like, why are we going somewhere?
But I think, I mean, what he's saying here is you do what's right.
Yeah.
You know, you God gives you 12 hours in a day where there's light. You got to do
appropriately
what's appropriate in that time. And right now, it's right for us to go to Judea, so let's get to stepping. And so after saying these things, he said to him, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awaken him. The disciples are like, what? They just told us he's dead, right? The disciples said to him, Lord, if he's fallen asleep, he'll recover. So now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought that he meant he was taking rest and sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus has died. And for your sake, I'm glad that I was not there, so that you may believe, but let us go to him. So right there, he's giving all of his purpose statements. Why? Again, at the beginning, he says, this is for the glory of God. Mm-hmm. This is going to bring glory to the Son of Man. And now he's looking at those that are closest to him, and he's saying, I'm really glad that I wasn't there to prevent his death, because what's going to happen is going to help
you
believe. And so the death of Lazarus, and so start mounting all this in your mental bank. Like, okay, God allowed this to happen so that God's glorified, so that Jesus is glorified, and so that his disciples actually believe, which means they're still like floundering on this whole idea that he's the God who's going to bring resurrection. So it's like, okay, you've seen this twice before. You're still struggling with this whole idea. I'm glad that he died, because I want you to see what's about to happen. Let's go to him. And so Thomas, called the twin, Doubting Thomas, as he's known.
Got rephrased after so tough bad. On Thomas.
Yeah, and it's just not fair.
Thomas had a question. He just had one.
Right? He's the only one who is not in the room when the resurrected Jesus shows up, if you don't know the story. And so which would have been such a bummer, right?
Yeah.
They're like, we saw Jesus, he's raised from the dead. And Thomas is like, oh man, I went out for coffee and, you know, I missed him. And so he's like, I won't believe it unless I touch the wounds in his hands and his feet. That happens after the resurrection. And so he gets the name Doubting Thomas from that. And the Lord, when he appears to Thomas, Thomas doesn't have to feel the wounds. He believes. But the fact that he's called Doubting Thomas when he's like one of the more bold.
Yeah, like what he's about to do right now.
Right, exactly.
No one talks about this verse.
Yeah. Let Thomas have his moment here, right? So it says, so Thomas called the twin. All the rest of them are like, oh, no, we can't go there. They're looking to stone you. We want to stay away. We'll all die. Thomas called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, well, let us also go that we may die with him.
That's a Thomas that needs more billboards.
Yes. Like, I love this guy. I want him as my wingman. I want him in the trenches with me. He gets a bad rep. Thomas is a bold dude. By the way, he goes to India. That's what he does after the resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
So bold, goes to India, establishes churches. The church there still to this day is called Mar Thoma. And they hold that Christianity spread there, and he is eventually martyred for his faith very boldly.
Does he get tossed off a roof onto a spear?
He's speared to death. I don't know if it's tossed off a roof. I have to go back and read the records, yeah, but he's speared to death and killed. This bold guy. So verse 17, it says, "Now when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days." Do you know why that's significant?
Death would have started.
Yeah, like, so decomposition for one, but there was like a mysticism among first century Jews, and they write about this in the Talmud, but like, if you're saying goodbye to somebody, they would believe that like the spirit of the person would linger for 3 days, right? So if you're saying your goodbyes, you're grieving, part of that is why the women want to come to the tomb of Jesus on the morning of the third day. It's like, hey, the time's running
last
out
chance
for us. Right. And so they would believe that the spirit of the person, this isn't biblical, by the way, but it was tradition or
Sam believes it, though.
Right, yeah. That the spirit would kind of hover around for 3 days. And so when it tells you that he'd already been in the tomb for 4 days, they wouldn't even believe that there's a spirit presence there to say goodbye
to. He's like dead, dead.
He's dead, 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 dead. And so Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, like we said, right on the other side of the...
So many details in the story.
There are. Like, it's a long story. We get up like 50-something verses, which is why we're booking it, if you're wondering. But it's 2 miles off, which is not far at all. Like, when you think about something 2 miles from where we are, it's a hop, skip, and a jump. Like, it is not far. You're not even out of Fort Lauderdale. But so it's only 2 miles off, many of the which makes it a dangerous place for them to be. That's part of why it's telling you that. The people who want to kill you, that are looking to arrest you, they're right over there on the other side of the mountain. And many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother, which is telling you lots of people are coming from Jerusalem over into Bethany, which means there's lots of people to run back and report he's in Bethany, right? So this is dangerous for him to do. And it also tells you that he's really respected, that you've got people from neighboring villages that are coming to grieve. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him. But Mary remained seated in the house. And so before we progress, what are the personalities? Because you picked this up in the Gospels. What's Mary's personality?
Oh, I always confuse. One of them's like the do, go get it. That's like Martha. Always moving around. And Mary's more subdued, sitting at the feet of Jesus, just being like, I just want to be with him.
Yeah.
And she gets the rap that she doesn't do anything.
Yeah. She's very tender. Like, I just have this picture of Mary. Every time you see Mary in the Bible, every time she's mentioned, Mary of Bethany, she's at the feet of Jesus. Mm-hmm. So, like, it already mentioned, you know, she was washing his feet with her hair, right? Well, where is she? She's at his feet. You know, when Martha's bustling around in the kitchen, where's Mary?
Sitting there.
At the feet. You know, in the last anointing, at the end, when she's preparing him for burial, what is she doing? She's at his feet. And in this story, you're going to see in a minute, she'll be at his feet. Like, this woman loves Jesus, and she's always humbling herself to put herself at the feet of Jesus, where Martha is wonderful, but she's the dutiful one. Like, I need to do. Let me honor you. Let me, where Mary's like, you know, and Jesus says, by the way, that Mary chose the better option. To be at the feet is better than bustling around in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And so he rebukes Martha and says, no, Mary has chosen what's better. And so, which is interesting, this woman is always at the feet of Jesus. And so Martha comes and said to Jesus, and I want you to notice, both of them are going to say the same thing here. Martha comes to Jesus and says, Jesus, Lord, I'm sorry. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. And so here you get, like, she's dutiful. Like, okay, I'm going to surrender. I'm going to salute. Like, I know you could have raised him, but, you know, I know you have a plan. Whatever you ask from God, God will give you. And so Jesus starts giving her, like, a mental lecture in some sense, like a compassionate lecture for her understanding. And he deals with these two women radically differently. So Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. And Martha said to him, because, you know, she's thinking on the last day, there's going to be a resurrection where everybody is raised from the dead and judged. So she's like, yeah, I know. He'll rise again in the resurrection on the last day. And Jesus said to her, hold on a minute. Like, I am the resurrection. What does that mean?
It's a new phrase, yeah.
That's, hold on, how is the resurrection a person?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not, hey, on that day there's going to be this great event and we're all kind of subject to it and we're all watching this event, you know, independently unfolding. He's saying, no, I am that. I'm the resurrection. You want to know why that happens? It's because I come. And I am the source of all life. I am the source of all resurrection. I am what brings flourishing to the withering. I am the one who yields life and made this whole thing in the first place. I am the abundance, the wellspring of life and resurrection. And he says, I am the resurrection and the life. And you could sit and just think on that, that when you draw near to Jesus, what are you getting?
Resurrection.
And your personal life and your devotional life. When you make yourself available to him and you get at his feet, what are you getting? Resurrection. You're getting life. You never walk away from real, genuine intimacy with Jesus going, well, I feel depleted.
Yeah, full of death, yeah.
You find who he is. You bask in his promises. There's a comfort that you get knowing that he's sovereign over all things. Like, he yields life, his example. And when you obey and you crucify yourself and you allow the Spirit to move in you, resurrection comes to all aspects of your life. He is the resurrection. His influence brings life. And so she's like, well, I know he's dead, so there's no hope for him. You know, on the last day, he'll be raised. And Jesus is like, you don't have to wait for the last day. You know why the last day brings resurrection? Because I come. I'm the resurrection. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? And she said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. Now, when she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying in private, hey, the teacher's here, and he's calling for you, which is kind of pretty cool. And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet come into the village, but he was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were in the house consoling her saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet. There it is again. Mm-hmm. Every time. I think when we get to heaven, she's going to be one of the people that I'll be most excited to meet and talk to, because I think she had a unique insight into who he was. I bet they had a pretty special friendship and just disciple mentor relationship. Like, she loved him. So even in the midst of the grief and disappointment, because remember, she's the one who sent word and he says, hey, you know, this isn't going to end in death. So she's crushed. She doesn't know what's going on. Like, I got that word from Jesus, but now my brother's dead. I don't know how to make sense of this. I love Jesus with everything in my heart. Like, I'm always at his feet, and I feel like he failed me. I don't understand what that promise meant. And so now I'm all kinds of confused. Mm. And listen to what she says, the same exact question that Martha posed, or statement. She fell at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Like, they get that. If you'd have come, you waited. Why did you wait? If you'd have been here, my brother wouldn't have died. Like, enter into that grief and all of that. Like, why would you let this happen? How many of us have those things where we go to God with authentic things where it's like, I don't understand. Like, I know you're good. I know you love me. Like, why would you let this happen? If you'd have just come, if you didn't wait the 2 days, if you'd have acted when I called for you, none of this would have happened. What's going on? Like, that's all churning in her heart, no doubt. And in verse 33, it says, when Jesus saw her weep at us.
I mean, he's human. I think it's an honest side of him that we see. Like, he's emotional. I mean, his friend is dead. Mm-hmm. And he sees even the grief that has been caused.
Mm-hmm. There's a cool way to look at this that I like. The word where it says deeply moved, they translate it differently to make it make sense to the, you know, the American English reader. But the word there, and there's a footnote with most Bibles, it's literally indignant. Mm. Like, he's snorting. It's Keller has a way of saying it, like he's quaking with rage. He is deeply emotional. Like he looks at death and he's angry at it. He's angry at the fallen world. He sees all of these people in deep grief, and he's not just going, well, you know, I'm going to be victorious and I'm going to overthrow death, so your tears mean nothing to me. You'll see in the end, I'll be proven right. Like he's looking at, in the moment, knowing that he's going to fix it, and he's still angry at the grief that it's causing people he loves, which is pretty wild. Like it's not just, he doesn't just weep as though he can't do anything about it. He will in a moment out of sympathy and empathy for what they're walking through, but he's quaking like, I hate death, and he hates it so much he'll die to defeat it. He's looking at their grief and he hates what the fall has done to humanity. And it says he's deeply moved, indignant, quaking in his spirit, and he's greatly troubled. Like, that shows you the level of affection that he has toward these people. He's not just like, well, he's dead.
Let me fix this. You know,
I'll fix it, and I have no emotional attachment to you, and I don't care what you're walking through. Like, he hates seeing grief. And that's like, that's one of the things that we, a promise in the scriptures that we walk by all the time. So Romans 8 throws out a line that blows me away that says, you know, when you go before the Lord and you're praying and you don't know what to pray because you're in such an emotional tailspin or confused or whatever the case might be that you don't even know what to pray, the Bible says that the Spirit groans for you with a power too great for words. Yeah. What? Like, God is not detached. God doesn't look at your suffering and go, well, I'm God and I'll fix it. You know, like, he's emotionally invested in you. The Spirit groans for you. Jesus is indignant when he sees this grief. So you have a God that's an emotionally invested ally of his people. Now, think about that. The God of the universe has this kind of emotion to your suffering. Does that help you?
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
And it's a good reset, even for my own mind. I think I get so used to the brokenness and being like, this is just, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, get used to it, everybody. We're fallen. Mm-hmm. We're sitting in the world.
It's almost impossible not to fall into that.
Yeah, whereas, no, like, he's like, no, this isn't how it should be.
Yeah.
And this isn't how I designed it. This isn't how I want it. And I'm going to fix all of that. Mm-hmm. But it's good to remember in the moment, like.
Yeah, it's going to come in this world. You're going to have trials. You're going to have tribulations. There's going to be suffering. But don't get too used to it. Keep your eyes fixed on what the design of God is, because that's where we're all going, okay? Yeah. And he said, where have you laid him? And they said to him, Lord, come and see. And then verse 35, shortest verse in all of Scripture, Jesus wept. What do you do with that? I mean, here you have, again, Jesus who loves his people so much. This isn't inauthentic. He's looking at Mary, who he knows is, I'm sure he's, you know, she's disappointed, she's grieved, she's confused, she's weeping. All these people are devastated. And even Jesus sees that and he weeps. Like, your God weeps with you. That's such a gift that we have a God who enters in and isn't aloof. You know, all the other gods, all the other systems would look at this and go, oh, that's blasphemous to claim that the gods would ever show this kind of vulnerability and weakness. Mm-hmm. They're too high. And yet it's out of that strength that Jesus enters into this world and relates to us. You know, he's not going to be overthrown by death. He's not going to be overthrown by tragedy. And yet he's strong enough to sympathize and to weep with us, which is incredibly strong, actually. And so verse 36, the Jews said, oh, see how he loved him? Mm-hmm. Notice that response. This is part of the story. You know, it's good that they see him weeping. You know, the Messiah, the Christ, is not some, you know, distant king who's just treading on people. Like, wow, this guy really loved him. And some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have also kept him from dying? So that's
good point too,
right? That's where, like, me, the cynic, would have been like, hey, why are you crying? You should have come 2 days, like, you know, 2 days earlier.
This, yeah, like, you're the problem here.
why? Yeah, like, come on. Why are you weeping?
We could have avoided all this.
Correct. And so both responses are there. And it says, Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It's a cave with a stone laid against it. That's foreshadowing.
Ding, ding.
Right? And Jesus said, take away the stone. So Martha, who's the logician of the bunch, the sister of the dead man, said to him, Lord, by this time, there's going to be an odor, for he's been dead 4 days. And Jesus said to her, did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? And so they took away the stone, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, so he's telling them, and this prayer, you know, he's not only praying it to God, but they're hearing this, they're hearing the purpose of all of it. Father, I thank you that you've heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me. So he's gearing up their minds, like, this is the great challenge, right? I want you know, the Jews that have come from Jerusalem, the friends of Mary and Martha themselves, like, I want you all to hear this. Ready? On account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me. And when he had said these things, he's looking at the tomb, and he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. You imagine the suspense at this? Guy 4 days dead, everybody's weeping, funeral arrangements and everything else are unwinding, like, you've got all the mourners. And the man who had died came out, his hands and his feet bound with linen strips, just as they laid him there, his face wrapped with cloth. And Jesus said to them, unbind him and let him go.
Yes.
And so many of the Jews, therefore, here we go in the list of things. So what has been accomplished there? The disciples see this, strengthens their faith. Mary and Martha see this, strengthens their faith. The townspeople that didn't know anything about Jesus or hadn't drawn near to Jesus or hadn't surrendered to Jesus, how many of them are now like, oh, I'm in? So because God let Lazarus die, there will be people in heaven that otherwise would not have been. And you got to see that God and his sovereign ability to kind of poetically put together the whole script of humanity, all of your days, all of your, and the way that you weave and interact with all the rest of humanity, that God allows things like this to happen because if he did not, a greater good would not have come about. Mary and Martha would not have understood, like, why did that? Like, Jesus does things that we can't understand, but we can trust him even when we can't understand. The disciples, same thing. And listen here, like, the Jews who had come from Jerusalem believed in him. Whoa. So he's turning some of his enemies into friends. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. So we don't know, like, I assume that they're going to be like, hey, he's over there and he's doing stuff again. And so the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered the council and said, what are we to do? For this man performs many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone's going to believe in him. The Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation, because you got this guy who's holding himself up as a god, as a competitor of Caesar. But one of them, Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year, said to them, you know nothing at all, nor do you understand that it's better for you that one man should die for the people, not that the whole nation should perish. So what does he say? I mean, what is he saying there?
Jesus is a real problem in their mind.
Yeah.
We have to handle this or else this whole thing falls apart.
But notice how upside down that prophetic statement is.
It's the reverse.
It's prophecy, evil. Yeah. What he's saying is we should kill the guy who's innocent to save the nation. And the reality is, what happens? They kill the guy
to save the nation.
To save the nation. To save all the world. Yeah. And so in this, you see, and they don't understand it, right? So even when they're saying that, they can't understand that evil act God could use to bring about beauty and life to the world, right? And so I think that's one of my favorite things about Lazarus. It's not just like, yes, he is the life and the resurrection. And when you draw near to him, you find resurrection and life for yourself just in your time of devotion. Have that mindset. Like, let that come to you. Like, life and resurrection. Resurrection and life. Like, bring it to me, Lord. I need it right now.
Yeah, what's dead that you need to bring to him?
Yeah, that's right.
Like, maybe not physically, but relationships.
There's so many things. Dying. Hope. despair. You look at the way the world is, and it's just like, I don't want to get out of bed in the morning. Like, there's so much that we just go, what's the point? You know, he's been in there 4 days.
Yeah.
Like, well, what are you doing? But you can bring it to him. Mm. And he's capable of raising dead people.
Dead people, yeah.
Dead people. We've seen all through the Bible that he's capable of steering sovereignly the course of history to bring about exactly his will. Nothing is beyond his power. He's the resurrection and the life. Like, you can yield those things to him. But then beyond that, one of the things, and I'm such a complainer. Like, I am, like, such a bad grumbler. Like, really, like, as a pastor, it's embarrassing because there's so many things that happen. And I know the character of God, but there's, and I know that he always will transform the mess I'm walking through into something
beautiful.
Yeah,
and you know the end.
Yeah, I know. He does it again and again and again. And yet I go through these things, and I'm like, God, why are you doing this? Why not that? You know, why don't you just help this? Why don't you save this marriage? Why don't you?
Yeah, where were you?
Yeah, where were you? You could have fixed this. And this is one of those stories where everybody in the story has that same mindset. Like, he was way off on this one.
It's just a natural state of man. I mean, that's how we all would look at it.
But Jesus wasn't way off. He knew exactly what was going to come out of this. And it was going to be for the beauty of everybody involved in this story. Except for himself, that then, you know,
gets more hatred. Yeah,
more hatred. But he knows what he's doing and his sovereignty. And the good news is he's the God of resurrection. So in the worst case, if it all blows up and you die, you know, which is going to happen, by the way.
Eventually.
He's got that. Yeah. There's nothing outside of his control. There's nothing where we should be like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? We know the end of the story. And we know that he has the power to undo every bad part of the story to bring about a happy ending, life and flourishing. And that's, I love the story for that reason.
And I think there's a cool note on community at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when Lazarus come out with his grave clothes, Jesus has to tell other people around him, like, hey, you guys need to go help him out. Like, he's not going to be able to get those off on his own. So even in our own lives, like, when we come to faith in Jesus, we do bring the baggage of all those things of death in our life, those addictions, those things that we faced. And we need a community to help us with those.
Yeah. You know, one of the archaeology kind of nerdy moment, they went to this little village of Bethany and they did like excavation underneath, and they found that there was an ancient burial tomb where lots of ossuary boxes were laid. And ossuary boxes where you put the bones of...
It's a bone box.
A bone box. And so on the ossuary boxes, you found lots of inscriptions, including some of these names like Eliezer and Martha. Eliezer would have been the Hebrew form of Lazarus. So we found that, and boxes marked with the cross and the fish, which is the sign of Jonah. And so, and that was buried. We know that all these people died before 70 AD, you know, when Rome, or when Jerusalem was destroyed by Rome. And so it's like this little community has evidence that they believed in resurrection. On all their bone boxes, you see mentions of Yeshua, which is really fascinating that this community, this took root. They believed in a God of resurrection named Yeshua, you know, and that divine Jehovah, raise up is one of the boxes. Like, they were a people of resurrection in Bethany. And I think probably in large part because of this miracle.
Word would have spread pretty quickly.
Right. Right.
And every time they saw Lazarus, could you imagine that reminder every single day? Walk by Lazarus, like, that dude was dead 4 days ago.
And there's, I'm sure there's a lot of people, were you really dead?
Yeah.
Were you really dead in there?
Is this all a trick?
Yeah. But that's who we serve. And so there's a lot of, you know, we're people of resurrection.
Yeah, hope-filled.
And we're people that, even when it doesn't make sense, even when we can't connect the dots as to why God does something, he's doing something that's far more beautiful than if we were in charge writing the story. And so even when it doesn't make sense to be able to pull back and go, all right, you're doing this for your glory, for the glory of your Son, and so that we may believe and trust in you, which means it'll be for our good. And I'm good with that.
Yeah, it would be like Mary and Martha today, like, confronts a bad word, but they went to Jesus with their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't avoid him. They're not like, oh, Jesus is down the road, he's coming. They're like, oh, I don't want to talk to that guy. I don't want to see him.
Yeah, one of the other things, you just mentioned that I think is kind of cool. Both of them come with the same exact question. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died, or statement. He treats but radically different, right? So to Martha, who's the dutiful, gotta have everything in a box kind of person, what does he do? He gives kind of a theological lecture, like, okay, Martha, let's walk through this. Like, I am the resurrection and the life. Do you believe this? Like, let's walk through the devotional exercise, because your mind needs to catch up with your heart. He gets to Mary, totally different, just emotional. He just weeps with her. He's tender, because what did Mary need? Martha needed to work on her mind.
Yeah, Mary needed a heart.
Mary needed to work on her heart. And Jesus comes to every single person, recognizes that they're all different, that your needs are different than mine. And he attends to your needs way differently than he does mine, which shows you that he's also very thoughtful. You know, he's not like, I am, you know, automaton Jesus, you know, I give everybody the same exact script. No, he knows every person down to the micro level and can minister to them in what they need specifically. Like, there's just so much about this story that's just really cool. He's a good God. And so, you got anything else you want to add?
No.
All right. So that is the story of the resurrection of Lazarus. I want to thank you for watching. Join us next time as we go into another miracle in the life of Jesus. Thanks for listening to The Bible Show. If you enjoyed this podcast, please remember to like and subscribe and leave a kind review to help us in the world of tech algorithms. Also, feel free to share with a friend. We'll see you next week with another episode of The Bible Show.